Many years later, many, many years later, there came upon the foggy valley a knight from France. In the story, they called him Lancelot. Lancelot was Merlin's son with that young woman. And Merlin knew that Lancelot would come. And when he came, Merlin basically welcomed him and said, "We have been waiting for you." And Lancelot didn't understand, because he didn't know that Merlin was his father. He didn't understand, for he said, "Well, I only had the idea to come just a short while ago. I was pulled to this area." And Merlin smiled, for he knew that the energy would pull Lancelot. Lancelot represented negativity. He represented that small dose of negativity that has to be in a dimension of total positivity. For if you have too much positivity, the dimension deteriorates. It literally deteriorates because it is so different to the earth plane. It is so, let's say, unusual and not the way that the earth plane is, that a dimension of total positivity cannot last in the physical. And so Merlin had this boy, gave birth with the young girl that he had the relationship with, and the boy was pulled later on as a full-grown knight, and he came to Camelot, and he came, and with him he brought that negative energy that was needed to allow Camelot to go forward to its ultimate destiny. Lancelot, because basically of his heritage, the son of Merlin, and because he had lived a very Spartan life, was very, very strong. Lancelot was as strong as Arthur. He had everything that Arthur had, and he challenged Arthur in every way, so to speak. And Arthur was baffled by the appearance of Lancelot. And he wanted to know from Merlin why this energy had come. Like, why this foggy valley, this group of people that seemed to be doing so well, training and working, why this negativity had arrived. And Merlin explained to Arthur the point that I just made to you, that the negativity has to be there in order for the dimension not to disappear, not to deteriorate. Not a challenge between Arthur and Lancelot, but there was a sort of combative but friendly rivalry between the two. And various people in the Camelot group would side with Arthur at some time and side with Lancelot at others. But there was not like a violent, or at that time anyway, there was not a violent confrontation between the two. The energy of Lancelot allowed the power of Camelot to go forward, and it did, and it created great energy. For the troubadours and the minstrels and the singers would take the stories of Camelot out into the little hostelries and inns, traveling into Germany and what is now Belgium and Holland and into France, and they taught stories of these knights. Because you have to remember that Merlin brought forward a lot of extremely original concepts. He taught that all men are equal, and that was symbolized in Camelot by the round table, insomuch as there were no high or there were no low knights. They also, in Camelot, had a special respect for femininity, and Merlin taught that man and woman are equal. And so there developed from Camelot also a feeling or an energy pattern of the fair maiden, that pure example of womanhood that was pure femininity, and an energy pattern where the femininity was revered. Whereas up until that time, the women were like dragged around in caves and used. You know, suddenly there was a new concept of womanhood, this fair maiden. And there was a concept of the knight, this chivalrous knight, who would defend the femininity of the maiden and would not infringe upon her except within the surrounds or within the bounds of matrimony. And so you had these concepts, the equality of man, chivalry, the fair maiden, and they went out and they changed Europe. because the troubadours and the singers sang about these concepts. And although the concepts were very new and unusual, 500 years later, they allowed, basically, the Renaissance to come about. Okay. When Arthur had trained for many years in this valley, and Lancelot had been there as well, it came time for Arthur to seek a wife. And Merlin knew where she was. She was to the north. She had been born from the union of a king and a queen that were not married to each other. She had basically come from that same bastard energy. And Merlin, knowing that the marriage between Arthur and Guinevere would complete an energy cycle, basically he sent out Arthur to the north of England to find the queen. Arthur went out, and you can imagine that, like, maybe it was a journey of many hundreds of miles, and in those days you had to walk or you had to ride your horse, but I mean it took many, many months, perhaps a year, for Arthur to return. During that time, the people in Camelot worked upon themselves. Many of them began to identify with Lancelot because Lancelot had this special power. Okay. Arthur came back with Guinevere. The union took place between the two of them, whatever marriage there was in whatever ceremony that they had in those days. And basically, at that point, Arthur's energy was complete. He had the outgoing energy of the knight, but he also had the feminine receptive energy of Guinevere. At that point, Merlin took Arthur to the lake. And from the lake, there rose a sword, which Merlin gave Arthur. The sword was called Excalibur. And Excalibur became Arthur's symbol of power. Merlin explained to Arthur that as long as this sword was not used to infringe upon others, that sword would give Arthur invincible power. And it did. Arthur became, as I said, a legend in his own time. And the stories grew, and his power was very great. Years passed, and there was a situation where one day, Lancelot, returning to the Foggy Valley from some kind of quest, was greeted by a great tumult of the followers or those people in Camelot that were aligned to Lancelot. And in the sort of the rejoicing and the festivities of Lancelot's return from this quest that he'd been on, there caused within the Camelot energy an argument or an ill feeling. And the supporters of Arthur fell upon the supporters of Lancelot, and a battle ensued. Lancelot was not involved in it personally. He stood back and he watched the battle in a non-infringement. Arthur was not involved, for Arthur at that time was away. At the end of the battle, 60 members of the Camelot group had died as a result of this altercation between those that were aligned to Lancelot and those that were aligned to Arthur. There had been no infringement upon Guinevere. The story of Lancelot's infringement upon Guinevere's sexuality is just not correct. What happened basically was that Guinevere, when she married Arthur or joined with Arthur, accentuated the division that was already there. She accentuated the splitting between, one would look at it like the energy of the king and the queen, but she accentuated the split that was there between Arthur and Lancelot, which was not a split between the two characters, but more a feeling or a split between the people that followed the two characters, Arthur and Lancelot. Arthur, returning from wherever he went, came back to the news of these 60 people that had died, and he became furious. And he drew his sword. And when he did, an immense power was felt throughout the valley, but also an immense amount of fear, because the people knew that this was an awesome event. He drew his sword, and he slew Lancelot on the spot. That night, a great storm came over the valley of Camelot. The people that were in the valley had great fear, for they knew that an immense energy was just about to change, that a power that had been there many, many years was like dissipating or changing or cracking up. The next day, Arthur, feeling totally demoralized, feeling like in abject sorrow, went to the lake, and he sat beside the lake. And as he did, he felt the sword falling from him. It was as if the metaphysical power that Arthur had was drained away from him because of his infringement and his misuse of it. And as the sword returned to the lake, as the legend says, Arthur, feeling this intense loss of his power, feeling that the Excalibur energy had been taken from him, literally walked into the lake after the sword. Arthur, at that time, was wearing his armor, and he did not return from the lake, and he perished. What is the significance of the Excalibur energy? What it is, or what Merlin knew it to be, was it is basically the energy of the higher self, that divine, limitless, eternal you, coming forward out of the lake of placid emotion, held by the hand, and the hand that held the sword from the lake was a feminine hand. Femininity, the inner way, the Tao. Femininity, a symbol or an alignment of nature. This naturalness that can come forward once the emotions are quietened, once there is discipline, allowed Arthur his power. Why did the sword fall from Arthur, as the legend says? It fell from him because if you develop a great power and you try to use it against the people, or you try to use it to infringe upon a lesser energy, even though Lancelot was not a lesser energy to Arthur, but if you use metaphysical energy against people, what happens is it causes in them great inner turmoil. They may not know that you're even using the energy, but the inner being, the inner them, so to speak, knows that that energy is there, knows that it's being manipulated, and people begin to become scared. They begin to become frightened, and the energy pattern that you project, instead of it being a positive pattern that allows everybody their space, that allows everybody to evolve in the time that they need to take to evolve, what happens is it begins to infringe upon them. And so metaphysically, you cannot take an energy out and infringe upon people without it eventually coming back to haunt you, or the power leaving you because of the infringement that you have or that you've been using it. And so in the story, what Merlin was showing was that there is the power. If used correctly, it can change a nation. If used negatively, it causes deterioration. What happened to Camelot was that shortly after the death of Arthur and Lancelot, the Camelot group split up. Merlin was devastated by what had happened, because you have to understand that he had a very, very close connection to both Arthur and Lancelot, or the Arthur being that we call Arthur today, and the being or the energy pattern that we call Lancelot in the story. Merlin knew from the very first day, from his very beginnings, from the time that he had that experience with the young girl, that the energy pattern that he created would destroy Camelot, for the power of Camelot, being so great, could not possibly last. But the arrival of Lancelot allowed it to go forward as far as it could. What happened was that Merlin withdrew back into the cave, and stepping from the physical dimension, entered into the dimension that the Merlin energy is there now. You have to remember that the energy that Merlin dealt with was this combined energy of Buddha, Lao Tzu, Zoroaster, Confucius, the energy of the masters, a coagulation of pure power. And that pure power, being like all energy, cannot be broken down or dissipated or got rid of. It is a power that can change, but it is always there. The energy of Merlin, the initiate energy, that like violet light is there. And each one of us has the potential of getting that light and working with it in our own life. The Camelot legend changed England. The word as law, the knight, the chivalrous knight with his word that was sacrosanct, the respect for the fair maid, the development of law and order was something that changed the history of the English people. And England was one of the first countries, in fact it was not one of the first, it was the first country, as far as I know, to have a constitution. And when King John signed the Magna Carta at Runnymede, he signed the first constitution. England had a parliament, just with the Scots and the Welsh joining later and the Irish joining later, but they had a parliament. And that parliament taught law and parliamentary procedure to the rest of the world. And so if you go and visit, say, for example, Ghana, and you enter into the Ghanaian parliament, that Ghanaian parliament has its history dating back to the same concepts that were written down in 1100, 1200, 1300 as the parliamentary systems of England began to develop. That small island, which today has lost much of its power, but that small island began what is basically the rule of law. It began to teach the equality of man. Even though the equality of man did not come about until almost 1500 years later with the birth of the United Nations, but still the country had that. There were rules and regulations within the English countryside of how the peasantry and the yeomen and the landlords and the feudal barons interacted. There was law. There were law courts. And you have to remember that in those days, things were pretty barbaric. To have any kind of court or any kind of redress at all was pretty amazing when the rest of the world was just tribal mishmash. But there in this small nation, there Camelot created this power. Even to the point where like 1,000 years later than Camelot, in the 1600s and 1700s, when the British ships went out trading with the world, they developed a system of insurance where a group of men would agree to pay the owner if there was a loss of the ship. And the only thing that the owner had was the word of the gentlemen that were involved in taking the risk. That word is through here to the 21st century, into the 20th century, as Lloyd's of London. And still today in Lloyd's of London, it's the gentleman's word that he will pay you if you lose your satellite, or if you lose your ship, or if you break a leg, or whatever it is, if you're a dancer that's insured her legs with Lloyd's of London. That history of this chivalrous behavior, whereby the gentleman's word was his bond, developed the British nation into great traders, because people could trust the merchant. They could trust the gentleman insurance man. They could trust the bankers, because the bankers, no matter what happened, would pay up. And that energy pattern is still true of England today. You can go to a bank in England and get money from them uncollateralized, with no security, with no guarantees. All they have to do is know you, and all you have to do is give the banker your word that you'll pay him back. Your word as a gentleman, that you will pay the banker back. And the bankers will give you money. And that never ceases to amaze me how the British banking system works like that. Of course, if you want to borrow £1 million or something, you would probably have to bring some kind of paperwork to show. But basically speaking, the banking system operates the same way as the insurance system operates, on trust and honor. And if you borrow money or you commit yourself to make a monetary payment and you can't pay, that's okay. But what happens is that by hook or by crook, no matter what, some way, somehow, you have got to pay that money back. There is no kind of walking away or reneging on commitment. The gentleman giving his word doesn't matter what he has to do if it takes 25 years, but in the end, he will make good his word. That is an energy that has come down through to this day.